green initiatives. It is the first office of its kind in our city government history. We have made tremendous progress under the leadership of Director Karin Haley. In 2009, we added over 20 miles of bike lanes to our roads and were designated a bicycle-friendly city by the League of American Bicyclists. Additionally, we will be installing another 11 miles this spring and have another 21 miles in the design phase. Last year, we conducted a thorough review of 70 city-owned buildings to gauge the potential for these buildings to be more energy efficient. As a result of the review, work will commence this year to retrofit those facilities, including the City Market and the City County Building, with energy-saving green technologies. This work will diminish the environmental footprint of these buildings and save approximately $2 million a year. But we can't talk about sustainability in our city without mentioning the efforts of the Indianapolis Museum of Art. As you walked into this building, you may have noticed banners advertising the Virginia B. Fairbanks 100 Acres Art and Nature Park on the IMA grounds. Formerly a gravel pit and construction area, the park has transformed a troubled site to a lush and wild natural terrain. The City of Indianapolis and the museum recently agreed to terms, allowing the museum to develop and maintain a parking area and main entrance to the park on land owned by the city. We were pleased to be able to partner with the IMA in hopes of attracting even more visitors to this unique site. And I am particularly pleased that the parking area will be a zero runoff project utilizing bioswales and native grasses to filter stormwater. You are also sitting in a room, the floor of which was 100% made with recycled tires. In fact, this theater was constructed with recycled glass, recycled wood, recycled carpet, and recycled concrete. If someone tells you recycling can't be beautiful, they've never been to the Toby. This wonderful museum is a profoundly important and well-established leader in the cultural life of our city. And having just had its 125th birthday, it has never looked better. What may be less well-known, however, is that there are more than 200 arts and cultural organizations and thousands of artists who help infuse the soul of Indianapolis with creativity and energy. Not only do the arts help make our city a place we all want to call home, they add to our quality of life in other ways, such as the generation of more than $50 million in tax revenue. In every budget I have submitted, I have advocated supporting the Indianapolis Arts Council with $1 million so that more than 50 community institutions can offer education and outreach activities for our residents. For each dollar that we invest in the arts, research shows generally five new dollars are returned to the local economy. We should be very proud and very supportive of the arts community here in Indianapolis. During last year's State of the City address, I announced the creation of the Infrastructure Advisory Commission chaired by the Dean of Liberal Arts at IUPUI, Professor Bill Bloomquist. Since that time, the commission has been busy studying ways to tackle our city's infrastructure needs and holding public hearings so citizens can have their concerns heard as well. We simply must think creatively in attacking these problems and not think narrowly when presented with a once-in-a-generation opportunity to address a generations-old problem. There's been some talk about a potential deal that could possibly generate hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue for the city, while at the same time mitigating rate increases in water and wastewater bills that simply couldn't come at a worse time for Indianapolis families. But any new approach must be an agreement that represents the best interests of taxpayers, ratepayers, and the city. And as long as I'm the mayor, I pledge to you that it will. When we think of infrastructure, we think of roads, bridges, and sidewalks, among other things, but we don't necessarily think about mass transit. In 2009, I initiated a private sector committee headed by Al Hubbard, John Neighbors, and Bob Palmer to work with our planners to study the feasibility of mass transit in central Indiana. I asked them to evaluate all regional transportation options and develop a plan that will serve as the foundation for further discussion. Mass transit is about connecting our city's neighborhoods with our city's businesses. It's about connecting the core of our downtown with the suburbs and beyond. We've built new bike lanes. We're starting new trails and lengthening others. We've invested millions of dollars in our traditional infrastructure and are discussing ways to carefully invest much more. Our conversation is about the interconnectivity of our entire infrastructure with our parks and our other spaces and our connection to the rest of the world. Modernizing how we move around this city is a signal to the rest of the world that Indianapolis is ready to join the front ranks of 21st century urban environments. In 2010, our mass transit discussion won't be about traffic congestion, but rather about how improving our transportation structure and strategy will improve the health of our regional economy and make us even more competitive for companies wanting to bring their jobs to Indianapolis. My administration is committed to exploring public-private partnerships for mass transit, infrastructure, enhancing our ability to generate revenue, and finally, sponsorship deals that can relieve the burden felt by the Indianapolis taxpayer. We've laid the foundation for these discussions and these opportunities. And for many of these ideas and possibilities, 2010 will be remembered as a year of action, action that is long, long overdue. We have entered into a new era of governance in Indianapolis. While we boldly build for the future, we continue to focus on the quality of life issues affecting ordinary citizens in their everyday lives, the grassroots element of governing. My vision for a renewed Indianapolis landscape starts with the basics expected by the citizens of their government. This doesn't mean we don't embrace our past accomplishments, but rather we build on them. It is a vision for a safer city, one in which people leave their homes and play with their children with the knowledge that their government is doing all it can to protect them. It is a vision for a more representative, a more efficient, a more responsive government, one that treats the needs of its citizens as its highest priority. It is a vision for an everlasting investment in fostering job creation and retention and sustained economic momentum. It's making sure that Indianapolis's voice is heard when it comes to creating jobs and landing the most lucrative conventions. It is a vision of diversifying our diversity to include our growing Hispanic, Chinese, Indian, and other populations in working with business leaders, entrepreneurs, and educators to promote the growth of minority businesses and make sure our fellow citizens are, in the words of Dr. King, our brothers, not just our brothers-in-law. It is a vision for not accepting less than the best we can do for every neighborhood. It is a vision of being unafraid to reach out to the private sector to tackle problems that could have been addressed a generation ago if only the opportunity and the will were present. It is a vision of a more sustainable, a more livable city that prospers with the aid of and without the interference of the political structure. It is a vision of a transparent and responsive administration, one that listens to your views during frequent public meetings, publishes information on the city's website, holds public budget reviews, and a monthly mayor's night out. It is a vision of an administration instituting the toughest ethic laws in our city government's history to include new rules for lobbyists who contact our elected representatives. It is a vision of a dynamic local government unencumbered by the burdens of an outdated 19th century configuration, one that provides the tools and the leadership for a higher quality of life, but leaves the energy of initiative to the citizen, his dreams, and his hard work. 1 year ago, I said that what made life good is a combination of the ordinary things, but a big city that can get the ordinary things right can be an extraordinary place to live. And because of the character and the strength of its citizens, Indianapolis remains that place. We have only just begun our journey to transform our city. The fate of our shared concerns and triumphs remain intertwined. We have much to do, yet much to be proud of. Thank you to the Indianapolis Museum of Art for hosting us tonight and for all of you for coming out this evening.